Gordon Strong joins me this week to discuss the new provisional beer styles and his travels in South America. This is Beersmith Podcast number 178.
This is the Beersmith Home Brewing Show, where brewing great beer is our passion. If you want to take your brewing to the next level, visit Beersmith.com, where you can download a trial version of our Beersmith software, subscribe to the newsletter, and get dozens of free articles on home brewing. And now, your host and the author of Home Brewing with Beersmith, Brad Smith.
This is Beersmith Podcast number 178, and it's late September 2018. This week, Gordon Strong, president of the Beer Judge Certification Program, joins me to discuss new provisional beer styles. Thank you to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top craft brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's the podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at beerandbrewing.com/podcasts. And also the new BrewVision thermometer from Blickman Engineering. This interactive wireless digital thermometer connects right to your iPhone or iPad and lets you remotely monitor and record temperatures. You can download your recipes right from the Beersmith Cloud and send updates and alerts as you brew. Get the BrewVision Bluetooth thermometer today. Another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith 3 software is available now for download, and also the mobile version's out. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider recipe support to the Beersmith platform, along with new integrated water profile and mash pH tools for beer brewing. Dozens of new features include cloud folders, updated databases, support for fruit, juice, honey, as well as new Whirlpool hop options. Download your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. And now let's jump into this week's episode. Today on the show, I welcome back Mr. Gordon Strong. Gordon is the president of the Beer Judge Certification Program and also the highest rated beer judge in the world. Gordon is author of the books Brewing Better Beer and Modern Homebrew Recipes. He's also a three-time Ninkasi Award winner as the top homebrewer in the U.S. It's great to have you back on the show, Gordon.
Thanks, Brad. It's always good to be with you.
So I haven't seen you since HomebrewCon. What have you been up to lately?
Doing some travel. After there, I went off to Paraguay in South America. Been doing some other local beer travel in the U.S. Just working on beer projects.
You got GABF coming up too. Are you going to that this year?
Yeah. I judge GABF. That's coming up in a couple of weeks, and. After that, I think I have three more trips to South America this year.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. I know you wanted to talk about some of your trips, but before we do that, I wanted to jump into some of the provisional beer styles. And before we do that, why don't you talk a little bit about what the BJCP style guide is and what it's used for?
Sure. The BJCP style guidelines are the... standard definitions that judges and brewers use in competition. So they're the primary reference that judges use when evaluating a beer against a style. And brewers will use those same guidelines to understand where to enter their beer so it gets the best showing.
So they don't necessarily compare one beer against the other. They actually compare it against the standard, right?
Yeah, that's what judges do. They'll judge one beer at a time, and the best scoring beer is always whichever beer best represents the style it's brewed against. There is a little head to head when the beers are of the same style, but we're always marking them against the style definitions.
And my understanding is you periodically revise this thing, right? It was last revised in 2015, I think?
Yeah, that's correct.
And it's used for all kinds of beer judging now, right? Throughout, really, around the world, right?
Yeah. One of the major themes we had in the 2015 guidelines was to really make them more usable around the world. While we've always had international beer styles, we were often representing those styles as they appeared in the United States. So we were trying to represent the styles more, the international ones more as they are in their place of origin. And we also kind of expanded the guidelines a bit to allow for different countries with growing BJCP populations to add some local styles, things that don't really get out of the country that we might not see, that they can still have a reference in the guidelines to use for competitions.
And I understand pretty recently you started working with something called a provisional style, which is really kind of a new construct, right?
Yeah. We had anticipated that in the 2015 guidelines. There are always new styles being created, and we like to watch them for a few years to make sure they're going to actually stay around for a bit. But trying to be a little bit more responsive to the needs for people to judge these things in competitions as people produce newer styles that came out since the last guidelines. We wanted to have a way of publishing those without undergoing the major work that happens when we actually touch the guidelines. So when we change the guidelines, it's not just that book. They get translated into different languages. They appear in computer software. They're used on different websites. We use it in our exam program, so we have to update the exams, study materials. There are a lot of changes that happen. So by adding these things called provisional styles, we can add things that people can use in competition, but they won't be on the exam. And it kind of lets us beta test new ideas before the next time we update the guidelines.
Right, because you can download the guidelines from bjcp.org, and I think they're originally in printed form, but now, as you point out, they're incorporated into software. I mean, my software certainly uses it. You got mobile apps that use it. There's tons of ways to access it, right?
Yeah. We make it freely available. It has our copyright, but we grant permission for using it for educational and reference purposes because we want it to be widely used. So it shows up in a lot of places. So when we make changes, there are a lot of third parties that then have to go update their software and websites and everything, in addition to the work that we have to do internally. So that's why we don't update the style guidelines in a major way that often.
Okay, well, let's dive into some of the new provisional styles. One of the most popular new styles that you actually have as a provisional style is New England IPA, which I think you have listed as 21B now, right? And that's a new provisional style, right?
It is. We actually, 21B is an existing category called specialty IPA, and we had a number of examples there. So we anticipated that there would be new IPA developments, so we created the style so that there would be a place for it. So people could always have entered this New England IPA under 21B, but then there would be a difference of opinion between judges and brewers as to what that style really is. So, we came up with a definition that people could use in the interim. So that's how that is used.
So you're kind of piggybacking off the existing 21B then, right?
Yeah, it's the kind of category where it can take multiple styles as part of it. Black IPA fits in that category. Session IPA, Belgian IPA. There's several different ones where we actually have a write-up. So we're basically adding another write up for New England IPA that people can then reference. But it would still fit in that existing style category.
So how does the BJCP define a New England IPA? What are the key characteristics and flavors and ingredients?
It's a less bitter IPA that tends to have a little bit more body, very fresh hop profile, often with fresh fruit qualities. People use the word juicy, which really isn't defined too well. I mean, we take that to mean like fresh juice. So, you know, these often have tropical characteristics. The way the hopping is done means that the beers are often hazy. They tend to be less stable, so they're often served very fresh. But that's basically it. It's kind of like an American IPA with less bitterness and more body and haziness, and emphasizing a very fruity, often tropical character from the hops.
And how do you get that sort of fruity flavor? And also, I was asking how the hops actually contributes to the haze.
The second part of that question first is you just use so many of them. The fresh hop particulates and dry hopping will often add to haze. Just the sheer vegetal mass being put into the beer, you know, leaves things behind. So the hops tend to be added towards the end of the boil. They might be added in the whirlpool. Dry hops are added while fermentation is active and also after. But it's just the quantity of hops seems to be maybe triple the amount of a normal IPA. But they're just all used so late that you're not really getting that much bitterness out of them.
And the tropical flavors, where do those come from?
Hop varieties.
Yeah. Are you picking, some of the new New Zealand ones or something?
It can be. I mean, there are plenty of American ones that are, sort of the modern ones that are expensive. Citra and sure, there'd be foreign ones like Galaxy from Australia. Mm-hmm. But Mosaic, just... You know, if you go out looking for hops, they're the ones you can't find, and if you do, they're expensive. Those are the ones that people are tending to use a lot of. These newer varieties are kind of bred for having these characteristics, but also a higher percentage of hop oils, which is kind of the delivery system for those aromatics and flavors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's, any other thoughts on New England IPAs, I guess, as far as a definition or examples?
You say any other thoughts on New England IPAs? It's like, is there 15 minutes up yet?
Yeah, no, it's not. Oh, you think it's a passing fad then?
Yes.
You do. Okay.
I actually think it's already peaked.
Yeah. Never know. You never know.
I mean, back at the Homebrewer Conference, didn't you see a lot of people pushing these brute IPAs?
Brute IPAs? No, I don't remember that. Brute IPAs?
Yeah, very, very dry, highly carbonated. They use enzymes to, dry it out down to zero or less. So
so you think this is the Zima of the beer world then? Or?
Well, writing up the New England IPA style is kind of difficult because it keeps changing. I mean, if you think about, going out and finding commercial examples, people point to Heady Topper, but I think a lot of the people that talk about New England IPAs would try that and say, that's too bitter. you know, the longer the New England IPA trend goes on, the less bitter it becomes. And then it sort of, you know, kind of split off its own variants. These sort of milkshake IPAs that people talk about, which aren't really part of the style, where people are adding lactose and fruit and other stuff in there. So it's kind of a style that, you know, people want a definition of it, but it has to stand still long enough so that we can describe it. So, you know, we tried to give it a little bit of a range, but, you know, I'm still not sure it's really, landed in any one place. I'm interested in seeing at the GABF, they added a category for that. They actually added three categories at different strength levels. So I'm interested in seeing what people are actually entering. Since it's such an unstable style, I hope, you know, the people handling the bottles are going to be okay, because you know, there could be some shrapnel in the back room when they're dealing with these. You know,
interesting. GABF is one of the only major competitions that doesn't use the BJCP style guide, right? They've got their own.
Yeah, they do, and they update it every year.
Yeah,
and people that complain of these, like, well, how come the BA can update theirs? And I said, well, how often do you think they update their test? Test? What test? They don't have a test.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of work to update all the styles. I have to do it in the software, obviously. Okay, well, let's jump to the next one, which is a little bit more of a traditional English style called Burton Ale. And you have it listed under 17A.
Yeah. We had an existing British strong ale category, and it's kind of like a subset of that. Burton Ale is maybe one of the most historic styles you can talk about with any any degree of specifics. Is it's from Burton, but it predates IPAs.
So you know, Burton, dark, Burton on Trent, yeah.
Burton on Trent in England. Yep, and so it's from that area. I mean, it's a dark beer, and it kind of predates porter. So, you know, these beers have been around for a long time, but this one kind of mostly disappeared. So we're describing somewhat of a historical style here. There was a very wide range of these beers. The lower end ones kind of fell out of the market. The higher gravity ones actually became English barley wine. They're the, or at least the dark versions of English barley wine. Then the sort of these mid strength ones are the ones I'm describing, you know, kind of around the World War One era. So I don't know if you've ever talked to Ron Pattinson.
Yeah, I had Ron on a couple episodes back, actually. He was on talking about post-World War II beers, actually, in England.
Yeah, so he's a character. Incredibly opinionated, but very, very knowledgeable. I coordinated with him on this style a fair amount. Because I know he had looked at it so much.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You're describing more a historical style. You know, when you say Burton Ale, I'm thinking of something like a Bass Ale, but I don't think that's what you're talking about here, right?
Nope.
Yep. So you're talking about more of a historical style, huh?
Yeah. This is sort of it's a darker beer, but it's not a stout. It's not roasty. It's kind of strong, but it's also kind of bitter. And it's malty with a fair amount of residual sweetness. So it kind of has a lot of moving parts. So you're getting, you know, alcohol and body and these darker malt flavors, but also with kind of a higher hopping rate. So, I mean, if you think about like a strong Scotch ale and a English IPA had a love child. It's kind of like that. You know, you're getting that sort of maltiness, but not roast. You know, the strength, but also with a fair amount of hopping. So it is kind of an interesting beer to taste. Some of the last versions in the UK, actually, like Fuller's ESB. You know, I know we've talked in the past about how that's kind of an outlier for you know, the family of bitters, and it's because it's not really a bitter. It was actually kind of one of the last surviving lower strength Burton ales that sort of morphed into like a winter warmer kind of beer, and then was rebranded as Fuller's ESB. So, you know, think about that malt richness that you get out of the ESB plus that hopping to it, and how no other bitters seem to be like that. Yeah, because that's kind of like what Burton ales are, but a little stronger and a little darker.
Interesting. And how? What was the threshold for deciding this would be a provisional style? Because obviously it's kind of a niche. It's a historical style.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. It was like one of these trips I was on, in all places, Christchurch, New Zealand. So, I mean, if you pulled out a globe and, you know, did the drill to China exercise, I mean, New Zealand is about as far away as you can get on the globe from the UK. Mm-hmm. But I'm in this place, and they've got I was given a BJCP orientation talk to a bunch of brewers at this brew pub. And after I was done, I said, hey, you know, is there anything that you recommend? And somebody says, well, the Burton on cask is really good. I'm like, the what on what? So, you know, it's like, how do they have a Burton here? It's like, well, they made it. And I was so kind of shocked. I got on Twitter and tweeted something to Ron Pattinson and said, look what I found. He's like, well, what's it taste like? And then I gave him a sensory description. He's like, sounds perfect. You know, I guess this is going to be a BJCP style now. And I said, I hadn't thought about it that way, but sure. So, you know, he was kind of challenging me a little. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'll write it up if you help review it. And, you know, he did. So, yeah, it's actually because I found somebody had made this style in New Zealand trying to resurrect this historical style from the UK.
And you have, even in the 2015 revision, you did pull in a number of historical styles, right? Including several U.S. styles that were almost extinct.
Yeah. Actually, something I wanted to try to describe as an American style, but I didn't really have any examples that I could use, was something called a stock ale. You know, a beer that was brewed for keeping and often used in bars to blend with other beers. You know, it was a stronger beer. And basically, the more I thought about it, it's like, well, that's essentially what a Burton was, but like in the UK. So, you know, some of the flavors I was tasting in that beer from New Zealand reminded me of actually a beer, an American stock ale that I did with Sierra Nevada at one of their beer boot camps. So, you know, I kind of had a personal interest in that, but I knew that it was actually kind of a nice beer to drink and different than other things that you're likely to find. So, to write things up, I actually need, you know, an example or a couple of examples, so I can actually kind of quantify some of the perceptions. As far as the other historical styles, basically, we needed to have enough research about them or enough examples that we could describe them. So there are certainly other styles we knew about. They could be described somewhat, but not at the level of detail needed for judging. So yeah, we have several other historical styles, including some that kind of been revived enough that I wouldn't really consider it historical anymore. I'm kind of thinking of Goza. We had written that up, and about the time the guidelines came out, it really sort of took off, and a lot of people were making that, although not many people are making it like the historical style. They're often using it kind of as a substitute for like a wheat beer, and then, you know, adding fruit or other things to it because it's so refreshing.
And how do you have like a committee or something that decides when to add a new style?
We do. It's kind of informal. Several senior BJCP people. But I have kind of the sort of the final say as the sort of the editor in chief of the guidelines.
Okay.
But we have lots of people that review, and we do listen to a lot of sources because we're trying to describe things that are out there, things that we know about enough that we can write about them in detail. We're not trying to invent things to tell people what to go make. We're trying to describe things that people are making so that they can be judged. So, some people think I'm sitting around dreaming up new styles that people should go do. That's kind of putting the cart before the horse.
Well, that was my assumption, really, Gordon, was that you're sitting around drinking and thinking up new stuff, right?
Well, I do sit around drinking, and I do think up new stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
Styles aren't one of them.
Well, you have two new styles in the X category, and one of them I didn't even recognize. What is a Katharina sour, I guess it is, right? Did I say that right?
Yeah, it's actually, almost. It's actually Katharina sour. The okay. H is kind of silent. It's from Brazil. There's a state. One of these states of Brazil is Santa Catarina in the south. And the style kind of originated there or was popularized there. It's a, I've described it as kind of a higher gravity Berliner Weiss with tropical fruit. But calling it a Berliner Weiss, I don't think is fair because that's not how they produce it. They don't use the same methods. It's essentially a kettle soured wheat pills beer, low bitterness, high carbonation, but always featuring fresh tropical fruit or fresh fruit, often tropical.
So I assume they use many of the local fruits there, or what's the preferred fruit?
Yeah, I've seen, a dozen different examples. I mean, some are fruits that we'd recognize, tangerines and raspberries and things like that. But, then there'll be tropical fruits that, are very familiar to us, like mango and guava, passion fruit. But then you'll see examples using Brazilian fruits that have no translation in English because they don't export them. So there would be no reason to have a name in English. You just use the Brazilian Portuguese name. Mm. Things like Jabuticaba and Cupuaçu.
I've heard of Chupacabra, but I think that's something different.
Yeah, I think that is something. But Brazil, for people that haven't been there, there are parts of it that are, it's almost like going to Hawaii. It's kind of tropical paradise kind of place. And the fruit is just fresh by the truckload. It's not like here when you want to make a fruit beer, you want to know like what can of whatever are you going to put in. I ask them how they deal with the fruit and they're like, well, this guy shows up with a pickup truck full of fruit and, one of the brewers, we got Ronaldo here is going to go, spend 11 hours, processing,
chopping it all up, I guess, huh?
Yeah, pretty much, or whatever it is they do. but they're always adding the fruit sort of post fermentation. So it's a sour beer, not as sour as a Berliner Weiss or a Lambic. A pH maybe 3.3 up to 3.5. Mm-hmm. But that includes the effect of, you know, adding in all this fresh fruit, maybe 10% by volume, added in post-fermentation. So it'll have this huge fresh fruit flavor with this, you know, sort of delightful acidity. It's warm down there, so you know, this is a really good warm weather drink.
And the fruit, the fruit doesn't ferment or fade away a lot, because, you know, a lot of the fruit flavors, especially tropical fruits, tend to fade. I don't know.
Yeah, but you know, this is a you know, you shouldn't be cellaring this. You should be drinking this.
Yeah.
So it's a real kind of running beer. you're looking to make it and serve it. So. Yeah, I mean, they stabilize, you know, it kind of stabilizes out. The pH inhibits some of the fermentation, but then again, they're just essentially serving it quickly. Mm-hmm. It's often a draft product. When you see it in bottles, sometimes it's pasteurized, and I think that hurts the product. It makes the fruit taste more like jam than fresh fruit.
And let's see, finally you have X5, category X5. What is the X category anyways? I meant to ask that earlier.
Yeah, so normally we have these category numbers. Well, the X ones are kind of, I mentioned before, there's these local styles. So they're styles that are maybe popular in one country only. You know, they sort of don't reach the threshold to be, you know, a main style in the guidelines because, you know, you can't really get it unless you go there.
Right, right.
Or they're newly developed, or they're homebrewer developed styles or something like that. So it was kind of a compromise we made to have these styles be able to be used in competitions without putting them in the main guidelines and having them be on the test. Mm-hmm. So actually the Catarina Sour, you know, is down there as a Brazilian style, but we're starting to see it be made, elsewhere, certainly, becoming more popular as people try it. I saw an example where, a brewery in Vermont made it, probably based on the article I did in Brew Your Own describing it.
Yeah.
Well, so, you know, I thought that was pretty funny.
Well, anyway, so the last one is X5, the New Zealand Pilsner. I think you talked a little bit about this at one of our earlier podcasts, but you want to talk a little bit about the New Zealand Pilsner, what makes it unique?
Yeah. The weird thing about their Pilsner is it's they, half the time, they don't make it as a lager. So, you know, it's called New Zealand Pilsner because that's what they call it. You know, calling it something like a tropical Kolsch, I think, was kind of more accurate. It shares some resemblance to a German Pilsner, but it's not simply make a German Pilsner, but use New Zealand hops, because the bitterness isn't quite as high, and the finish isn't as sharp and dry. It's softer. They tend not to have any sulfur in the water because we're coming from the yeast, because it tends to clash with the New Zealand hops. So it's kind of a slightly less bitter, slightly softer finishing German Pils-like beer that has a strong New Zealand hop character, including sort of a higher aroma and flavor than found in most German Pilsners.
And do these capture some of the fruity flavors we were talking about earlier or not?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Things that, you know, especially if there's some Nelson Savon hops in there, the sort of gooseberry flavors. But often the New Zealand hops have a lot of flavors that I think actually match what you taste in New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc wines. Melon, lemon, lime, maybe a little minerally notes, gooseberry. You just have to use different New Zealand hops to see what they're like, but they have a pretty extensive hop breeding program and with university research backing it up. So, that's why you see all these New Zealand varieties coming out, but they have a very unique character. I mean, if you tried to call that a German Pilsner, it's like, well, these aren't sort of German noble hop characters, and the hopping is too high, and it's not quite as crisp, so it would do poorly. And since they're using dry yeast, half the time they're using US05, at least for a commercial. Homebrewers will use W3470, make a really nice lager out of it. I prefer it as a lager, but if they're doing it for commercial reasons, they'll probably just kind of try to turn it pretty quickly.
Well, along these lines, have you seen the BJCP style guide start to gain more acceptance outside the U.S.?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That was actually one of the, and that part isn't new. On my first trips to South America in maybe 2011, I was shocked to see commercial brewers basically using it as a brewing manual. They'd have the 2008 version of the guidelines there and be say, well, I've never had this, but this sounds good. I think I can make this beer. And they'd try to make it. And I was just stunned that they would be using it that way. So
do they run into problems sometimes? Because many times they haven't even tasted this style of beer, right?
Yeah, but there's a flip side to that as well. And I'm sure I've told you this story before, which is American IPA was a very popular style in South America. And so many places I went, try this, tell me what you think. Like, well, it's not very bitter, and it's kind of caramely, and just kind of doesn't taste right. It tastes old. When did you make this? Well, I made this last week. Like, and then I finally figured it out. They were cloning old oxidized beers, so they were getting the commercial examples, but then their reference was wrong because the beers were stale. So, I spent several years in between trying to get them to understand what IPAs taste like. And this very last trip that I took to Brazil last April, I mean, I tried some that I would have like scored, 45 on a BJCP score sheet as an American IPA. I'm like, I don't know who you guys are, but you understand it. Everybody should try this. When I talk about what an IPA tastes like, I mean, you guys have it. So some people are finally getting it, but it took them years. Because they were, like I said, they were cloning stale imports.
Yeah, and IPAs have a very short shelf life, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And don't do well under poor storage conditions either. So,
No, it's quite a long ways to South America. I know how long it takes to fly there. I can't imagine how long it takes on a boat, but you got to cross the equator. I mean, you're almost talking about like the original IPA story, right? I mean, by the time you're shipping something.
So, at the end, I think you wanted to talk a little bit about some of your trips in South America recently. You want to tell us where you've been and some of the things you've seen?
Yeah. And actually, before I'm specific about some of the places, one of the... I always find it interesting to see people say, I know you from, this thing that you did. And a lot of people are kind of impressed by the title president. So, of the BJCP, or they might've seen some of my books, but, more often than not, I'm like, oh, I was listening to you on this podcast. I'm like, well, whose? And more often than not, it's Beersmith. So you've got quite an international audience, whether you know it or not.
Yeah, I'm sort of surprised, but I think I'm up to over 5 million downloads, so that kind of gives you an idea, 5 million total downloads, but still, been doing this for a little while.
Yeah, and, you know, they seem to love it and eat it up. I mean, I love the people in South America. They're, they ask good questions, and they listen to the answers, and then they use it. I mean, that's what kind of separates them from people in the United States. You know, somebody comes up and says, "Hey, tell me what you think of my beer." What they really mean is, "Tell me what a great brewer I am," as opposed to "Help me make a better beer." You know, when the people in South America, you know, ask me to taste their beer, they're asking me what improvements they can make. Mm-hmm. And so every time I go back, the beer is better. So people are clearly listening. So I think that's the coolest thing, is that, you know, why do I go help these people? Because they listen. You know, I don't like to waste my time. And if I see I'm actually helping people, it's great. Plus, every country loves to, like, cook meat over fire. So, you know, there's this huge rivalry between countries of, like, no, they always call it asado. It's basically barbecue. Like, no, ours is better. Like, well, you know, you have to let me try some. So I try not to get into too much judgment on that. But yeah, the people in South America are great, and they're big fans of yours. I see I've done some collaboration projects with some breweries down there. And when they're sharing recipes and things with me, they'll just send me a Beersmith file. Yeah. You know, so whatever you're doing down there, keep doing it. Keep supporting, you know, the international languages and things.
Yeah, we had Beersmith 3 launch. We actually had it in Portuguese before the launch, which was a kind of an accomplishment, I guess, right?
Well, yeah, that's cool. And, you know, people are like, you know, what about Brazil? It's like, you know, there's 200 million people there. It's a pretty big country. People are just kind of sponges for information. That's why I love going down there is people need the help. And, you know, I like helping brewers, and I help, advance the judging programs. Sometimes I'm down there giving exams or speaking at brewing conferences, or, you know, sometimes I'll judge homebrew competitions, but a lot of times I'll be judging commercial competitions. So I get to see how these things are developing. Even if they had brewing traditions going back a ways, craft is relatively new to everyone. So they have infrastructure challenges as well. Malt extract is unavailable. So everybody starts out as an all grain brewer, which I think is awesome. But you know, equipment can be hard to come by, and they're often stuck with dry yeast. Although I did go to a place in Brazil that was a yeast lab, and they were doing liquid yeast and starting that up. I haven't really seen hop research down there, but it's a good place to grow grain. So they have a lot of the good base malts. Some of the specialty maltsters is still a little bit of a boutique thing. So they have these challenges. And information, there's not a lot of native language information, so a lot of the brewers tend to at least be somewhat conversant in English, because they have to read and listen to things like this, which makes it easier for me. But you know, they often have to take materials and translate it and convert recipes into ingredients they have. So, you know, they do have some challenges, but they're You said every time I go down there, things are better.
So we only got a few minutes left, but I don't know if you want to talk about any specific countries you went to, a specific experience, maybe a story you have.
I spent 2 weeks in Brazil in the south last April. I love it down there. Those people are great. They're making some of the best beer in South America, and they really kind of roll out the red carpet. A competition, three exams. I gave four lectures and training classes. It just seems like I was doing something almost every day down there, and people were just, I did like three collaboration brews. It was fantastic. Everywhere I went, people were great. I think, homebrewers are, the best people in the world, and it's not tied to any particular country. So when I go to these places, people are always looking for fun things to do with me. Like, if I've been drinking beer all day, I'm interested in trying some other things. So, in some places I get to try their wines, other places I get to try their cocktails.
Barbecue, I've heard, is popular.
Oh, yeah. And some of these places in Brazil are right on the coast, so we had some good seafood there as well. But one day, I said, okay, what do you got planned for me today? Say, we're taking the day off. We're going to take you on a boat. So we did like a small boat ride around their island. It was just absolutely gorgeous. It was so much fun to have like a free day in the middle of all the work. Yeah. But then, then the next day we sort of jumped into it, and they're like running a 500 entry competition like a boss. I mean, they were they got it done in like a day and a half. And it was just one of the smoothest run things I'd ever seen. So just like really proud of how well people are moving along, and BJCP judges are growing like mad down there. So they're still behind where we are in the U.S., but they're closing rapidly. So I went to Brazil, Mexico, and Paraguay already, and I've got Uruguay, Chile, and Brazil again coming up before the end of the year. So
nice. What real quick? What styles are popular, say, in Brazil?
Well, I think American IPA, American Pale Ale are going to be popular everywhere. But actually, in this 500 entry competition I did in Brazil, the third biggest category entered was this Catarina Sour, and one of those actually won Best of Show. So, yeah, that's good. I see some Belgian beers. They seem to like Belgian blonde and wit beer. Some of these countries have a big German influence, so you will see a number of lagers. Weiss beer is kind of more popular than it is here. I mean, you'll always see one of those around. Porters and stouts show up as well. So Irish red is another one that I see quite a bit. And then, you'll run into people doing the experimental stuff, people doing sour beers and things like that.
Well, Gordon, we're actually coming close to the end of our time, but I wanted to say, have you got any closing thoughts you wanted to finish with?
We talked about the style guidelines a little earlier.
Sure.
So I'll give you an exclusive here. I'm looking at doing an update, a small update to the guidelines, probably by the end of the year. So there's very likely to be a 2019 BJCP style guidelines, mostly to correct some places where people were a little confused, clear up some language more than anything.
Are you going to renumber them again? That's always the one that creates a lot of work.
I'm hoping not. There might be a couple of name changes,
Okay. Sounds fair.
But, yeah, there's actually kind of a small story there. Basically, the Trappists complained about us using the word Trappist. So it's not like there was any sort of legal ground to like challenge us on this because we're not actually selling anything. But, you know, there's got to be some bad karma thing by picking an unnecessary fight with a bunch of monks. So we'll probably make a change there to...
So you can't call it Trappist. What are you going to call it then?
Well, I mean, I'll probably change Trappist single to Belgian single, so it matches more like Belgian double, Belgian triple. Mm-hmm. And we had a Trappist ale category. We'll probably wind up calling it something like Belgian monastic ale or something.
Abbey ale or something like that. I don't know.
See, yeah, I mean, Abbey was kind of the first thing that we kind of thought about, but that's actually protected as well.
Abbey Road. So,
no, there actually is a group that that authorizes beers to be called Abbey beers. And what we're trying to do is to avoid confusion in the marketplace. I don't want a brewery to make, I mean, and this was kind of the Trappist argument. They say, well, if your style is called Trappist Single, then a brewer can think they can call their beer Trappist Single and put it out. And anybody selling a beer that uses the word Trappist, it better have the authentic Trappist product mark on it.
Didn't you know, this pop up a long, long time ago with like Steam Beer, I think was another one that.
Yeah, you know, and we've never used that as a name. But, you know, we're a nonprofit organization. We're not interested in getting into legal arguments. We're trying to describe things. Yeah. And that's kind of the downside of becoming more popular, is that people find more things to pick at. So we're going to try to clean that up a little, maybe get some, you know, maybe get some good karma going for us. you know, like, you know, Bill Murray and Caddyshack, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Gordon, I really appreciate you coming on the show again. Thanks for agreeing to appear.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, sometimes I have something very specific to talk about, and sometimes it's good just to sit here and chat and talk about, you know, what's going on in general.
Well, and I'm very much looking forward to the 2019 revision to the Beer Judge Certification Program Style Guidelines.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, and when people listen to this, when you see me in South America, come on up and say hi to me. Don't be afraid. You know, I travel to these places to meet people. So, I encourage you even if you don't know me, just come up and introduce yourself and say hi. And, if you make beer, bring it. I'd like to try it.
I thought you just went for the free beer and barbecue. You had another reason to, yeah.
Travel. Oh yeah. You go for the free beer and barbecue and, you know, meeting a lot of, great friends is just a bonus.
Yeah. Well, again, today my guest was Gordon Strong. He's the president of the Beer Judge Certification Program, as well as an author and a three-time Nkazi Award winner. Gordon, it's a great pleasure, as always, to have you on the show.
Yeah, I love being here, Brad. Thanks.
A big thank you to Gordon Strong for joining me this week. Thanks also to this week's sponsors, Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. They have a new Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine podcast, which I encourage you to check out. It features some of the top new brewery owners and brewmasters discussing brewing techniques and flavors in beer. It's a podcast for those who make and drink great beer. You can find it on iTunes or at beerandbrewing.com/podcasts. And also Blickman Engineering, creators of the innovative new BrewVision wireless thermometer. Remotely monitor your brewing system from your iPhone or iPad, record data, set alerts, and grab recipes directly from the Beersmith Cloud. The BrewVision thermometer, another great innovation from BlickmanEngineering.com. And finally, Beersmith 3 is available for download now on both desktop and mobile platforms. Beersmith 3 adds mead, wine, and cider support, new Whirlpool hop options, support for high-altitude brewing, and a whole lot more. Check out Beersmith 3 and get your free 21-day trial today from beersmith.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a great brewing week.